Welcome to Michigan Hockey Cast 6.21, where we hope you'll meet us in St. Louis and at the fair. Last week, you promised an opener for this week. Do you remember what it was?
Vaguely.
Vaguely? Are you dodging the question?
You can go with it.
Well, last week you wanted to rant about the Red Wings and the wild card spot and the turtle race on a conveyor belt that's going backwards. This week, we're going to debate the certainty of the teams that are going to make the playoffs in the West. Unless you want to argue right now that the Blues are going to pass Vegas if they win tonight. If they win tonight.
Probably not. They are...
They would be tied on points if they did, right?
I think they'd be two back. Let me look.
I thought they were two back.
Yeah, they're four back.
Okay.
Vegas has a game in hand.
Yeah. So probably not.
Probably not. It's possible. It would be a tough hill to climb, but...
So, sorry, Ryan Zook. Anyway, all right. So we have eight teams... And my question to you was, who is the team that you would want to play the most in the West? It doesn't really matter who you are, but if you were in the West and you got to select who you would play in the playoffs, because there's pretty much only eight teams that are going to make the playoffs, unless you're a wild believer.
If we're doing a PWHL-style playoff format here. I think part of it is what team you are, and I think that plays a role.
Okay.
And if I'm picking, it depends on which team I'm picking for. In the abstract, I would probably say the LA Kings, I think, might be my weakest of these eight teams.
I was debating that, yeah.
But if you're not like a tremendous five-on-five offense team, then that's a dangerous matchup because they do that pretty well. They bog teams down. They grind games down. They are just so passive in their approach to the neutral zone, and they defend the slot well. But on the flip side of that, I don't know about Cam Talbot. It just hasn't felt like they have the finishers to get over the hump, which was kind of their problem last year and the year before against Edmonton.
Well, and their goaltending kind of melted down, what, two-thirds the way into the series, halfway into the series?
Last year, yes. Last year. They have a different goalie this year. Talbot's been pretty good, but we also kind of know what his deal is, and we know sort of the extent to which he's just helped in general by playing behind this really good defensive team. They just don't score at all. I mean, they're a good goal prevention team at 183 against, but they've only scored 220 goals this season. That's the same number as the Minnesota Wild, and it's only four more than Calgary. It's 15 fewer than New Jersey, for example. It's five fewer than the Ottawa Senators. And so to me, LA, I just don't think you can, I just don't know if they can make a championship run with the current complexion of their sort of forward roster.
That's kind of what I was thinking too, is that there are arguments for a couple of the other teams, like say, Nashville can't stay this hot, or will Vegas actually be able to assemble their super team? Those are questions that remain to be seen, but... Overall, is it worth just taking the team that might have the lowest ceiling of all of those?
Yeah, I think it's probably a coin flip between LA and Nashville as the sort of, in theory, weakest team. But yeah. You know, you can kind of go either way on that.
And then would you put Vegas at, if let's say we go LA and Nashville, would Vegas be the... sixth team, I guess, if you're going 8-7.
Yeah, I think they have to be. I think at some point you have to... We're not the college football playoff committee. We actually believe that games played has value. And that the sport is not played on paper.
Okay.
And you've got a Vegas team that's been basically NHL 500 for 4 months now. Something like that, November, yeah. December, almost 5 months.
Now, part of it has been because they've been decimated by injury.
I mean, a little bit, but their injury stuff's way overstated.
You think so?
In my opinion. They haven't had that many injuries. Stone got hurt later in the year, but he still played quite a few games. I mean, they've got a lot of guys that have played at least 60 games that are pretty core
pieces
to their team.
Eichel has come back.
Eichel's come back.
But
I mean, they've missed some guys.
They made a trade for Hurdle, and he isn't around yet. And I think
he's
transferred to LTIR, at least for the time being.
I mean, Pietrangelo's played 62 games. Marchessault's played every game. McNabb's played every game. They've been a little better on defense than up front. And even Stone and Carlson and Eichel all play at least 50 games. Whitecloud played 51. They're a team that misses a couple guys here and there. But they've played a little better as of late, but they've also beaten not good teams.
Well, and then Aiden Hill.
Aiden Hill
left the game.
And he had been kind of bad for a while. At one point in the year, like around Christmas, he was rocking like a 935, and it's just been plummeting since then. So it'll be interesting to see how long he's out and what the story is with that, and if Logan Thompson then seizes the net. I'm just curious to see how Vegas looks in this stretch coming up, because they got Nashville and Winnipeg on this upcoming road trip. And then in April, they play the Canucks twice, Oilers, and Avalanche. So that will give us a little better barometer once they're working Hurdle back in, and what is this team made of. On paper, they're a good team, a really good team, but we also have to acknowledge that this isn't something they do every year, for example, right? People talk about the injuries, the LTIR, blah 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 blah. Last year they had 110 something points.
Yeah,
they won their division.
Yeah,
they were not bad last year.
No, they were a good team.
They were a really good team in the regular season, and so when they're not this year, that's something you have to just note and point out.
So then, who do you, out of the remaining Pacific teams, who do you sort of value more then?
Because
you
have Vancouver,
right? You have Vancouver and you have Edmonton. So, which one of those teams do you think has? I suppose there's two different questions. You could ask the same thing of like, who would you rather play? But then also you could say, who do you think has the probability of going further? Or do they match up well against each other in terms of? Like, that could be a really good series, or do
I think
you
it'd
see...
Be a, I think it'd be a very fun series. I think that the Canucks are decently well-built to deal with Edmonton. I think that's a favorable matchup for the Canucks, just in the way they play, because they lock down defensively at 5-on-5 pretty well, and they have a goalie that can also prop them. The weird thing with Canucks and Edmonton, by the way, is they played three times this year in the first like 3 weeks of the season, and then haven't seen each other since then. And they'll play one last time in April, but in the meantime, a lot has changed. And when they played those three games early on in the season, Edmonton just caved him in all three games, and the Canucks shot like 25%, and they won the three games. Since that time, the Canucks have become a vastly better 5-on-5 team, and that's why I want to see what the matchup would look like now as opposed to then. And I mean, Edmonton's the top team in the league in terms of their underlying play, their ability to control play, all that stuff. Their record since basically Thanksgiving has been pretty impeccable. So they're really good. I think the Canucks are really good. I might lean Canucks in that matchup just because I think they're a well-set-up matchup. I think the Oilers maybe have more chance to win the Stanley Cup in the abstract, but
yeah. So you like in that particular matchup, maybe you'd lean Vancouver, but say Edmonton gets by them or Vancouver doesn't get out of the first round, you kind of like Edmonton.
I just think that if a team is going to beat Edmonton, they're probably going to have to do some degree of a just like we beat you on goaltending and finishing sort of thing. Probably not to the extreme of that Ottawa game last night, but just because Edmonton's the number one expected goals team, they're probably going to outshoot whoever they play, and whoever's going to beat them is probably going to be a team that has that ability. And even though the Canucks have played way, way, way better at 5-on-5 and then their ability to control play since then, they still have that card up their sleeve and a lot of experience beating teams when they get outshot. So.
So then, all right, now you have three teams in the Central left that are all, they've all sort of been, they're not the same, but have just kind of almost been on a merry-go-round as to, like, who's winning the division now and, like, who's getting hot now and that kind of thing for a while. And so which one of Colorado, Dallas, and Winnipeg are you the most suspicious?
Probably the Jets, just because they have less track record. Dallas has been to the conference finals last year, a vastly different Dallas team went to the Stanley Cup Finals a number of years before that.
Right.
Colorado obviously won a Stanley Cup a couple years ago, so they have more proof of concept in the playoffs. The Jets had not as much. The Jets are a dangerous team. The thing I feel like with them is I feel like they can only beat you one particular way. And that's something I always talk about, is that you need to be able to win games different ways.
Yeah.
They don't
in the playoffs.
Yes, they don't. You can get pretty far winning just one way.
Yeah.
But it's pretty hard to win the 16 games necessary.
Yeah.
Winning one way. And the way they win is a pretty effective way. They play low event hockey. They suppress chances really well, and they have an elite goalie behind them. But the flip side is they do not score much at all. They are like, they're the Kings, but they have a much better goalie, which is really nice. But again, there are times when you just look at this team and it's like, can they score enough?
Yeah.
Needed. And they got shut out by Washington yesterday, and I was watching some of that game, and they had some looks in that second period, but they just don't overpower teams offensively. They don't have... they have a pretty deep lineup, but the star power isn't quite as there.
Sort of like Carolina.
Yeah, there are some similarities. I'm a little more skeptical of them, but it also kind of feels like at some point Connor Hellebuck is going to have one of his just sort of signature runs, and it's going to be his moment to put his stamp on a playoffs.
Yeah.
Because typically he's like, oh, I have a 925, but my team got outshot 40-18, so we lost in six games to an actually good team. Whereas this year they have a good enough team that if he is as good as he normally is, then maybe they could actually win a couple rounds and put that stamp on. But yeah, I think Dallas and Colorado are more well-rounded.
Do you see a major edge in that series, or do you think that's a pretty knockdown, drag-out 6-7 gamer?
I think it comes down to goaltending in a lot of ways,
yeah.
As hockey almost always does. But Dallas in particular is a team that you look at and you say at this point in time, their biggest weakness is Jake Oettinger. And it's unquestionable, I think. He's got an 898.
You texted me a while ago and you were like, I'm ready to start a conversation about how...
The Charles Barkley meme.
About how Jake Oettinger is a bottom 10 goalie.
This season, he has not been very good. And that's going to be the big question for them, because he's got an 898 and he's doing it on a team that's excellent in the way they control play and
yeah.
That kind of thing. So not a good sign. And he's been pretty rough as of late. His last few games have been better, but he gave up 4 on 10 shots against New Jersey. He gave up 30 shots against Florida. He gave up 6 on 20 shots against San Jose. He gave up 5 on 27 shots against Colorado, not getting it done, and that's going to need to change. The good news is there are definitely instances in his career previously where he has been a lot better than that, so Dallas can lean on that, and that's why I may lean towards them against the Avalanche, because I'm just not a big Georgiev fan personally, and I think Oettinger's potential is higher, but Georgiev I feel like is more reliable and at least just doing his baseline,
yeah,
whereas Oettinger is he's been kind of high and low over the past couple of years. So
you might get a lockdown guy and you might get a sieve.
Yep.
Just sort of.
But these two teams, their roster of skaters are both just tremendous. They've got such good players up and down the lineup. Colorado's better at the top, but Dallas's ability to play Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven on a third line is pretty legit.
Yeah, and they play, I believe, one more time before the season ends. I think they play in Colorado one of the last couple of weeks in April. That'll be interesting. I think I was looking through the Avalanche schedule, and they get Winnipeg once, Dallas once, Edmonton, I think, twice, and Vegas still once. I think they finished their series with Vancouver. But
I think this West playoffs is just going to be really good.
It feels a little bit like what you said the East last year.
A couple years ago, yeah. It's another throwback, because I remember when the East was on pace to have everybody have 100 points and like six teams to have 110 that year. I was like, when was the last time this happened? And there was one year, I think it was 2014 in the West, back when Chicago was really good.
The Kings.
And Anaheim and the Kings and the Sharks. You know, Nashville had good teams in there. Minnesota was decent. The Blues were really good for a while. And those playoffs are a lot of fun. And I remember going back to that 2016 playoffs and 2014 playoffs. And I think every series in the West was a six-game series.
Hmm.
In the East, 2 years ago, that was the case, all except one series, which was the one where Tampa shut out
the Lightning
Florida.
Panthers,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So evidence says that this is probably going to be a brutal playoffs, and it's going to be long series in comparison to the East, where we're going to be throwing tomatoes at the screen.
Waiting for Florida to win it.
Some of these series. The East will have a really good series between either Florida or Boston and then the Leafs, and then it will be a really good series between whichever poor sap wins the division and gets Tampa. Those two, I think, will be good series. The other two, probably not as much.
Okay.
But the West, the first round, should be some just tremendous battles. And, you know, the weather's getting warmer. The hockey's getting more physical, tighter checking. It's starting to ramp up, starting to feel more like playoff games. If you love the sport, this is what it's all about. This is real hockey. If you don't like this, go watch something else.
The NHL playoffs, I think, have been...
like college hockey.
The NHL playoffs have been... You know, the NFL playoffs, I think, to me, always are generally the highest draw. I mean, that's obviously football is kind of king. But the NHL playoffs as a whole, that like 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is, generally kind of encompasses it because you get so many games and you get so many teams and there's always something every night. And when the West is good, you know, you can usually get a game early and a game late, and there's always a good hockey game on to watch for the better part of a month and a half. So
it's hard to beat it.
All right. Well, we will transition back into your favorite sport, college hockey, and talk about a very frustrating game at Munn on Saturday.
Low point for college hockey this weekend.
Well, I mean, the game itself, I thought, you take out a few things, and the game was pretty good, pretty entertaining. It was certainly close and had a lot of seesaw back and forth activity in it. You know, Michigan got off to a really good start after a defensive zone turnover. Josh Earnesy gets the puck, skates down the left boards, has a nice backhander in front that Nazer wins the race to the top of the crease and tips the puck up and over Trey Augustine into the net. It was a dream start for Michigan in that sense. Like, you know, you wanted to get off to a good start against a team that's sort of had your number the last few times, and going up there to Munn, you know, the place was bonkers, and people are finally figured out that they have a hockey rink to go to, and they have a team to watch. So getting that first goal, I thought, was pretty key for Michigan.
Yeah, I thought they came out and played really well right out of the gate. I think those first 10 minutes were really, really good, and they got an early lead. And that first goal, it was like, yeah, okay, we're into this game. We're off and running. It was different than the previous couple meetings against Michigan State, where that first one, I don't think anyone scored for the first like 30 minutes, and then it was 1-1 going into the third.
Right. The second game at Yost.
Yeah, and then the duel in the D. I think MSC led that game the whole time, didn't they? Michigan was always chasing. So it just felt like, okay, we're in the game now. We got our feet wet and we're in command, and then they were continually in command.
Well, and then they even put the puck in the net a second time not too long after that. Rucker kind of circles behind the net and hits an open Brindley in the slot, who waits a beat and then beats Augustine. The problem is that Shifsky bumped into a D-man who then careened off of him and into Trey Augustine, and it was reviewed and brought back for goaltender interference. You know, you and I had a strong take on this. Some people...
We debated it yesterday on the MGO pod.
Yep, and...
So what I was talking about on the MGO pod when I kept saying that the referee was all over it, why I wanted to point that out was, to me, this was a call that if you made me watch this and you just said this goal does not stand, I would have said this is a good goal on the ice and they overturn it on replay.
Hmm. Okay.
Because to me, this is one that you watch in that slow motion view and you're like, oh! He pushed him in. He pushed him. See that contact?
Yeah.
Then he goes flying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what it would look like in slow motion. But I think in real time, you see it wasn't a lot of contact. And that's why I, as I said on the MGO pod, I just don't love it, just because it I feel like the contact needs to be more deliberate, or else we're opening up a lot of loopholes for defenders to bowl into their own goalies.
Well, and the question really becomes, is it a shove or is it a position battle?
It was kind of a bonk. you know, hip
oh,
check.
Oh, okay. Like erratic?
Yeah, just a hip check, sort of, bonk, and the guy just goes spiraling in.
But that's...
It was not an extended cross check. It was not a high hit, and that's what I prefer to see. If
yeah.
I'm going to wave a goal off for an attacking player contact.
I was... When I saw it, I thought that it was more of a battle, and the one dude, the Spartan didn't win it, and by that result, went flying into the goalie. It did not seem like you said, where you get a guy who just shoves a guy out of the way, but that's not how it was seen. It also felt a little bit like Michigan's off to such a strong start, and maybe we don't want that. Maybe we want a tight game. And you know, that kind of continues for a while, because Michigan actually gets a 3-on-1 right after that, after killing a power play for Michigan State. So they have a chance to really add that goal back in. At, like you mentioned, the first 10 minutes of the game, shots are 8-0 Michigan. So State doesn't even get a shot on their power play yep. that they get early on. And Michigan is, like, in complete control. And that's when, you know, I don't have the data that tells me about shifts and time on ice, but Luca Fantilli was behind his own net and turned the puck over. It came out in front. Tanner Kelly came flying in and blew one by Barcheski to tie it at 1 on State's first or second shot of the game. It was very early in their shot count. But I don't remember seeing Luca on the ice after that.
Yeah, he might not have been.
At least not noticeably.
Yeah, this is a coach's worst nightmare. When you have a guy that you're not really too confident in playing, and then you put him on the ice and he gets immediately scored on. Because then you're just like, why did I ever do that? Why did I ever put him in the game to begin with?
Well, and this especially if you don't play him after that, then yeah.
Well, right. I mean,
if you're rotating him in, it's kind of like, well, eh. But it didn't seem like he was there.
So I've talked about this off-air a little bit and how much I don't like the ability to dress 19 skaters.
Yeah.
Because I think, as a coach, you feel like, well, I might as well, because...
Well, you're not going to turn it down.
Why not? But it's so weird, because there isn't a spot for the guy to play.
Yeah.
And it's the similar story to when NHL teams carry 3 goalies. It's just... There isn't room for this. We have 12 forwards who play on 4 lines. We have 6 defensemen who play on 3 pairs. There isn't a need for another guy. And so then you sit there and you're kind of like, well, should I mix him in? Should I not use him? Should yeah. I just... And there, I mean, we've seen plenty of times where they've dressed Josh Arrico and he just sits there the whole game. And it's just kind of, what's the point of this?
Well, that was because that was a while ago in the season when a lot of guys were hurt.
Exactly. But my point is, we have seen instances where the 19th skater just did not play at all. And at that point, you know,
I mean, I guess because if you reach dire straits and you have no one, then
you
better to have a body.
You put your 19th skater out there for one shift, he gets scored on, and it's now like, well, what do we do now with this guy?
Well, right.
And this is just a brutal play from Luca.
Yeah.
Turns it over along the wall, then loses the physical battle to retrieve the loose puck, and the guy he's battling with passes it right out in front for a quick shot goal. And it's a tough one for Barcheski.
He's
on the close post, you know, he's kind of watching it, but he turns and then the guy's right there. And this is
and the shot goes far side.
And again, this is your third pair up with your against the fourth line for MSU.
Well, the fourth line's been good against Michigan all year. I mean, it feels like Tanner Kelly scores every game.
Still not a good idea, you know, still not a great sign.
Well, that makes sense. So it's 1-1. It feels like Michigan's great start has been erased because they never got that second goal. One was taken off the board. They botch a 3-on-1.
It's just a classic case of, like, we're all over these guys. We're stepping all over them. And the first chance they get goes in.
Yep.
And that's just a big air out of the balloon.
Well, right. And it's hard to blame Barcheski because of the particular shot that is the first one that he sees.
Yeah. And it's a terrible defensive play.
Yeah. But you never... Like, it's almost kind of like if you're a goalie, you're like, hey, maybe let one through. Let me make a save or two. Let me find a rhythm here. Don't let me sit here for 10 minutes without seeing a puck. Because at that point, you're like, all right, am I even here? But anyway, so then the penalty fest begins in the second half of the first period. And State gets another one after an obvious Warren holding call. They get a couple shots, but nothing super dangerous. And then at the end of it, Edwards gets tackled, which leaves to Michigan's first power play. They get some decent movement on their first power play, but not really a great final pass. You know, we've kind of talked about the difference when Michigan can hit a guy in the tape on one of those one-timer setups versus when the guy has to readjust and kind of catch the pass first. And Michigan was moving the puck well, creating space, but the final pass was just a bit off. So the advantage that you created from your puck movement and your extra skater was slightly negated because you couldn't shoot it as quickly.
I thought MSU was really well structured on the PK in this game. I thought the way they were and doubling Michigan players applying immediate pressure, it got Michigan a little uncomfortable in those first two power plays in particular. And I think that's the way you defend Michigan's power play.
Because mm-hmm.
if you give them time, they're just going to start snapping it around and
yep.
you're in big trouble.
Yep. They definitely did that on the second power play because I don't even think Michigan got the zone at all. I don't even have any notes of anything. And so then each team has had the two power plays, hasn't really done a lot. And the one thing that Michigan did do is Truscott made a bad error at the end of the power play that led to a Michigan State breakaway, but Barczewski comes out, makes a nice save, deflects it to the corner, and it's 1-1 after one. Something that I think after watching the first few minutes, you're kind of like, ugh, you know, would have been like nice to have a little bit more. Going into the second period, really not a whole lot happens for the first like 10 minutes. I think shots after the first period were something like 14-6, and about halfway through the game, they're 16-9. So each team gets a couple chances, but nothing that's too amazing. So you're about halfway through, it's still 1-1, and then the last 10 minutes of the second period were rather fire.
They were high event.
Yes, and high result, too. So a shot comes in on Barczewski that is tipped, I guess, before it gets to him. That allows for a larger rebound that kicks out into the slot. The puck is passed once, and Isaac Howard from Russell, and he finishes into an open net. You don't love a rebound there, that big of a rebound, but as you mentioned on the podcast that I didn't catch the first time, that the shot was tipped, and so Barczewski didn't get the control on the rebound or the ability to grab it the way you would have liked.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. It's a rolling puck. You got the deflection, the slot. It takes a hop on him. Then the rebound is bouncing and rolling around. The culprit on this one is, I believe that's Ethan Edwards. Let me see that number.
I think it was the Warren and Edwards pairing that were in front, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, I think, three guys in front and two...
Yeah, it's Ethan Edwards here. He comes back. I mean, this play cannot turn into a goal. He retreats into his own end. He picks the puck up behind his own net. I mean...
So Michigan has possession.
This is before it's about to happen. It's
yeah.
two Michigan guys backtracking in their own zone with no Spartans.
Yeah.
And this play turns into a goal within 8 seconds. He's set up behind his own net. There's one Spartan forechecker standing in front of the net just waiting for something to happen. It's an easy breakout, easy first pass to Garrett Shifsky to begin the breakout, and he puts it off the boards in front of Shifsky. It hops right to the point man, and because Brindley's the guy in the slot, he's not ready to start defending. He's skating forward to start. He's going to get the next pass from Shifsky to begin the breakout, and instead, the pass is not accurate. It goes right to the guy at the point, and he does a great job just to toss this puck on net. Got the guy in the high slot who's all alone because Brindley is thinking it's a breakout.
Yeah.
And then it's deflected in front, and Edwards isn't there in time. You got a rolling puck. It's a whole meltdown. But you got to be crisp with your passes.
Yeah.
Puck management, just fundamental stuff.
Well, and that's the thing that we talk about is, you know, Michigan gives away goals sometimes in their own zone because their defensemen can be a little bit loose. And, you know, this one started with a loose pass from a defenseman, Ethan Edwards in this case. So it's 2-1. Not feeling great going down 2-1 after dominating, but you know, Michigan gets a power play soon after that, and this is one they take advantage of. It's their third chance, the last power play of the game. You get a pass from, I think it was Casey who creates and
yes.
dishes over to Rutger, and this
pretty,
is a
pretty classic Casey pass.
Yep, down into the house. He dishes backhand to Rutger. This pass is right on the tape. The shot comes in. It looks like Augustine's going to have it as he slides over, but he doesn't quite secure it, and it kind of leaks out to the side as he's moving from his right to his left. Dylan Duke is where Dylan Duke lives, grabs it, and throws it in the net to tie the game at 2. Pretty standard Michigan power play goal.
Casey cutting down the wing, draws the pressure in, flips a mind-bending pass to an open guy. Just routine stuff from what we have seen from Casey over the years.
2-2 feels a little bit better, and then pretty much right after that, Philippe Lapointe gets the puck on the boards and throws a cross-ice pass just above the crease through the low slot to Marshall Warren, who has to reach a little bit to grab it, but does corral it, skates in with a stride or so towards the net, goes forehand, backhand, and lifts it up top shelf over Augustine. And I got a text saying, when did Marshall Warren become Cale Makar? Because the finish was like, I don't ever remember seeing Marshall Warren do anything remotely like that. He's been a lot better in the last month or so with puck carrying, and you know, he scored a goal on a shot from the point and everything. But this was a high skill finish.
Yeah, it was not an easy finish in tight there. Had to flip that backhand up over right, tuck it in. Heck of a play.
Michigan,
his off puck reads, by the way, have been really good the last little bit.
Yeah,
just sensing where the puck's going to come from and cutting down to put himself in opportunities to score. It hasn't rewarded him much, but it did in this case.
So 3-2 Michigan. Then Earnesy gets a breakaway, kind of. He sort of running backs through two linebackers to chase down a loose puck, gets in, but can't get the puck in. He gets a rebound, but Nazer's on the wrong side of the net, and so Augustine is able to save it, and it's kept out of the net in that sense. Would have been nice to kind of get that. I mean, if Earnesty scores there, you feel really good about this game, kind of as the period winds down going into the third, but they can't. Instead, we get probably the biggest talking point of the game. So it's 3-2 Michigan. State has the puck behind Michigan's net, sort of in the corner below the goal line, and a shot comes in from basically a negative angle below the goal line, and it gets into Barcheski, but I think he is not sure where it is in his pads and in his gear, because you see him kind of like react as like, okay, I've got it, and then he starts to kind of panic and kick a little bit, because as to, oh, did I squeak it out the back, and then he sticks his leg out to the side, and his leg doesn't really go across the line, but it gets really close to the line, and that's when the Spartan comes in with the stick and kind of jams at his pad and pushes his pad and his puck into the net, and I don't ever remember seeing this kind of a goal given as a goal upon review, which it was, but the first thing that you have to kind of say about Barcheski is, like, it's not a great goal because he loses it in himself.
First of all, it's not a goal. That just needs to be stated.
Okay.
The whistle blew.
Yes.
The play was over.
That is true.
Second of all, he got lucky that the whistle blew.
Because it shouldn't have?
It was under him, and I think it was going to... I think that my point is, if the referee just holds and waits 2 more seconds, it's a goal. Because then it gets banged in by that guy on the far side.
So are you allowed to, like, ram a pad and jam a puck
but
loose?
The puck was...
It feels like if the puck is under a pad, it's frozen.
It wasn't completely... let me look from the top angle.
Do you have a telescope?
Let me look from the top angle again. Because he has it for a second, and then his legs kind of kick out. And then,
right.
And then that's when he's sort of laying there. And I think that Spartan that came up saw him push those legs out and was like, oh, it's right on
maybe
the goal
line. Maybe it's not in, yeah.
I mean, I'd have to zoom and blow this up to see where it is.
I don't, yeah. The thing that you don't like is that he kind of loses it and doesn't know where it is, and then, like, kind
of... It was a heads-up play by the MSU guy in the corner. There are goals like this that you see where the goalie's standing there on the post, and it's like, hey, wait a second. What if I try and bank it in off his far skate?
Right.
And they try that, and it almost works. And it goes under his two skates. And then when he kicks those legs out, I can't quite see where it is, but it's real close to the goal line. And that's why the MSU guy comes up and is like, wait a second, is it loose? Can I just guide it in gently?
Yeah.
And I...
The problem more... All right, so we've talked about that, and that is an issue. But the real problem is the fact that this went to review, and the referees...
It doesn't need to be discussed. We discussed it on the MGO pod. It's a preposterous, impossible call that... Everybody knows, no one has ever seen anything like that called. Referees don't seem to know the rules.
Here we are.
What else can you say?
Yeah, but it's given as a goal because it was.
It's just this sort of thing, I think, with Barczewski in terms of that shot from the corner there, and then you have the goal that happens a little, you know, a minute later, that where we're at right now, if you're in an obscure angle, why not throw it at the net?
Yeah.
The rebounds are kind of bouncing around, a little shaky. He's not tracking pucks super well.
Well, and I think that this one had him and the rest of the team rattled because Michigan didn't
up. They were totally on their heels the rest of this period.
Yeah, and you know, the puck kind of comes from low to high, and you get an open shooter from the point just as the period is expiring, and the shot is a rocket, and it goes under the bar. Beats Barczewski, beats the clock by about 0.7 seconds. And so it's 4-3 from a game that, you know, started as what looking to be a blowout in Michigan's favor. It isn't because they can't get the second goal. And then they come back to take a 3-2 lead after being down 2-1. And now they've given up two goals, one which was nonsense and the other one was just like an emotional nap, I guess. And so then you enter the end of the second period and you're like, I don't even know how to really process all that stuff that just happened. Like, we played really well after not playing well, and then we stopped playing well, and it was that was sort of Michigan's season all wrapped up into about 10 minutes, it feels.
Yeah, it's Michigan's season because the scoreboard read at the end of the period, 4 goals on 15 shots.
Yeah.
Some of those were questionable goaltending. Some of those were brutal, brutal mistakes. And just lapses and things like that. And then some high-skill goals and 3 goals put on a pretty darn good goalie at the same time. And, you know, it's still not really being enough necessarily to create distance
right
from a fellow high-end team.
But as the third period starts, you get a shot from Dylan Duke at the point, and it hits Frank Nazer's back skate out just outside the crease, and he redirects it in. No kicking motion. Pretty simple, and it's 4-4 right away. You know, part of it then is like, you know, you start looking around and they tie it up, which is a good response. You know, there are times when you've seen this team fold a little bit. They didn't in this case. And you're like, man, we've beaten this guy 4 times and it's still not enough. Like, how many goals do you need to win this game? But at that point, it's a pretty simple goal, 4-4, and it feels sort of like next goal wins is probably getting to be on the table. The thing that I don't really like for Michigan here is that as the third period goes on, State has more of the chances, and Michigan doesn't super threaten too much for the rest of that period.
No, Barczewski redeemed himself in the sense that he held them in the game. He got them to overtime.
Yeah, because he made a handful of saves in that period that you and I both were sitting close to each other and thought, well, that's in. Yep. Oh, they've scored. Wait, they didn't? How? How did that not go in? And that sequence of sort of thoughts to words probably took place 2 to 3 times
yeah.
in the final 5 to 8 minutes. But they do get to overtime. And then, you know, kind of the thought in overtime is like, I felt, you know, if Michigan gets one in the first few minutes, maybe 5, 6 minutes, I think that's their best chance to win. As the period was starting to progress, I was like, you know what? They're going to have to get something goofy, or they're going to have to get lucky. But the first few minutes, they sort of controlled play, controlled the puck, generally had offensive zone time. Not grade A chances, some chances. But once that started to fade, you're like, we're kind of hanging on here.
Pretty much. They had some looks. I don't remember them too well. Everything that kind of happened in this game was a blur.
Finally, a shot comes in from the point. Barczewski reaches up, doesn't catch it, gets behind him in the net, and it's 5-4 final in overtime. You know, in the end, it's a pretty even game in terms of Corsi, in terms of shots, in terms of ozone time. You know, Michigan wins the special teams battle ever so slightly. Augustine's probably a little bit better in net than Barczewski. So, you know, you kind of get a pretty even game. One team's going to have to win. It comes on kind of a whiff from a glove, but...
wasn't a great one. But this is how overtime often goes.
Yep.
Don't get too many breakaway overtime goals. They tend to be dumb stuff.
I think, you know, in the end, I don't hate Michigan's... You know, we'll talk more about this in the next segment, but I don't hate Michigan's matchup with State. They're not a team that really any of the times they've played has severely outplayed Michigan and kind of scares you from what they put on the ice. I think they're a very good team. They have a lot of talent. They have goal scorers. Obviously, we know about Augustine. But this was a game that, you know, Michigan scored 4 goals. They beat him 4 times and was probably good enough to win. They got a little bit of job by the referees. They gave a couple back themselves, and they didn't get a good enough goaltending performance.
Pretty much.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924-9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
Disappointment of the Big Ten championship game in Edmond, Michigan now gets to turn their sights to St. Louis, where they will be the 3 seed in the Maryland Heights, Missouri regional. Michigan
Is
State
that the Midwest regional?
I don't know. It's not really
because we've been in the Midwest regional 2 straight years with Allentown, so it'd be interesting if it's a 3rd straight.
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
I think. I mean, it's probably not Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls is the West regional,
and I'm guessing that Providence isn't the Midwest regional.
That'd be surprising if it was.
Thanks, Alex. Geography with Alex. yeah. So it's the Midwest regional. I don't even call them by what they're. Names are anymore in terms of like what cardinal direction, because that's just not how it works, because these sites are never really where they're supposed to be anyway. They're just 4 towns wherever they are. But anyway, Michigan is in Maryland Heights, Missouri, the Midwest regional. Their 1 seed is Michigan State, of course. North Dakota is their 2, they're the 3, and then Western Michigan's the 4. And kind of the joke that I made in the preview that we'll be releasing on Wednesday is like, hey, isn't this just the State of Michigan regional? Like, why? Maybe we should just play this in Michigan.
I'm very happy that Michigan is so well represented in this tournament.
How about in this regional?
Yeah, they could have swapped Tech in, and then we would have, and it would have worked too, because they would be conference, you know, would have checked out from a conference standpoint. So
yeah, but then they would have had to bump them up and
yeah.
In North Dakota. But anyway, so the first team that we're going to talk about is North Dakota, because Michigan is going to play North Dakota. This is going to be Friday night at 8:30, so the 5 o'clock game is going to be Michigan State and Western. We'll talk about that in a second. But the North Dakota Fighting, not Sioux, but Hawks. Okay, so they're 21st in Corsi, which is, I guess I expected it to be a little bit higher, but... 26% on the power play, that's pretty good. Their penalty kill is 82%, that's not bad. It's not, you know, Ohio State from a few years ago or BC from this year, but it's still respectable, pretty good. They have 11 drafted skaters, but no first rounders, I don't think. Maybe they have one second rounder, but mostly mid-rounders, as you pointed out before. They have four skaters that are scoring over 0.75 points per game, so it's two different pairs of forwards that play on two different lines, similar to how Michigan sets up their forwards. And their goaltending is very Michigan-like, 2.47 GAA and a 9.06 save percentage. But the interesting thing is that their starting goalie did not play the last, at least, game against Omaha. And there is a little bit of rumor that he may or may not be ready for this weekend. The difference in that is that their backup goaltender, Hedquist, or what is it? Hobie Hedquist. Yeah, I got it right. Has basically the same exact numbers in just a smaller sample size as their starter, Ludvig Pearson. So maybe it doesn't matter.
Just from the bird's eye view, without any expected goals information, you would guess that these guys are not very good, because North Dakota is 11th best in fewest shots allowed per game, and they're getting 905 goaltending from that.
Okay.
So not... Now, they play in a good conference. They play some high-profile offensive teams, Denver most notably, but doesn't seem like either of these guys are particular world beaters in any way, because they're not facing a ton of shots and they're not putting up particularly impressive save percentages.
They do have the nation's second leading scorer in Jackson Blake. He has 21 goals, 38 assists for 59 points, and he's scoring at about a point and a half per game, which is a pretty impressive clip. I think Fantilli last year was up around 1.7, so that's still a lot. And then Cameron Berg also has 20 goals. Reese Gaber has 18 goals. So they do have a few guys that will put the puck in the net. I don't think they're the elite one of those North Dakota teams that is carrying guys that are, you know, surefire top six NHLers. But they do have a few guys that you look at and you say, well, we got to keep an eye on these fellas.
Yeah, Jackson Blake, I believe, is the son of Jason Blake,
New York Islander.
Of New York Islander fame, who also played in North Dakota. He started at Ferris, but then he played his final 3 years at North Dakota.
Well, that makes sense then.
Yep. Jason Blake was a pretty good player. He scored 40 goals 1 year in the NHL. Mm-hmm. But this is just a classic college hockey team, right? Like, this is what you, if you went to the store and bought a box that said college hockey team.
As we generally do.
Encompassing the last 25 to 30 years.
Are they little plastic fellas?
You pulled something out. This is what it would look like.
Yeah.
They have some guys that maybe could play some NHL games, but not a ton. They have a lot of guys that were mid-round picks, some guys that are now juniors and seniors that have developed over time. They're well-coached with a pretty famous coach in Brad Berry. All that kind of stuff. This was college hockey before it was corrupted by legitimate NHL talent, and there are still advantages to that. This is an older team than Michigan, and they've been a really good team wire to wire. They haven't had the consistency problems. They were on track to be the number three overall seed until they choked against Omaha in the NCHC.
They gave up six
semifinals, so they're probably going to be mad about that.
Yeah, because they probably would have been the number one seed in Sioux Falls at that point.
Yes, which would have been an awesome draw for them. And
given what, who else went to Sioux Falls?
Instead, they got shipped out here to...
Yeah, and this is...
Ludvig Pearson was second team all NCHC, so maybe he's better than we're giving him credit for. It's also maybe the case that the NCHC is just a bad goaltending conference, because their best team, Denver, was not a good goaltending team for most of the year. Western's goalie is Cameron Rowe of Wisconsin, notoriety.
Moe and Rowe fame?
Yeah. So that might just not have been a good goaltending conference, and that might be why Pearson is second team.
And he's a transfer. So this is his first year in North Dakota. I think he was at Miami.
Okay, sure.
And I looked at sort of his numbers the last few years.
Yeah, he was 891 and 894 at Miami the prior 2 years. I mean, Miami's been a dystopian team, so don't put much into that. It's very possible he was quite good under those circumstances.
But then he comes to North Dakota, and his numbers tick up
Some.
A little bit.
But not like a crazy amount, despite his goals against average drops well over a full goal, but the save percentage only climbs about 10 to 15 points.
Right.
So, maybe not having the greatest year of all time.
No, I think he's not a... I mean, you know, goaltending, as we talk about, can be very random, and, you know, guys that aren't very good can pitch shutouts from time to time, but, you know, I think I looked at his last few games. I put this sort of in the preview, and he's given up 3 goals in, like, 6 of his last 10 games, so there's a good chance that Michigan's going
to... I think this will be a higher-scoring game.
Yeah.
North Dakota scores a decent bit, so...
That kind of probably... plays to Michigan's favor in the style that they want to play. You know, the thing that you kind of have to take into consideration is that it's probably not going to be a penalty-laden game.
Probably
the NCAA tournament games generally are not. You'll get your few.
We also should have referees in this game who are familiar with the rule book, which is a good upgrade.
You know, it's hard to... I spent a while before deciding who I think is going to win or who I'm picking or whatever. I don't know.
One NoDak thing, they haven't been to the Frozen Four in a long time.
They went in, what, 16?
That was their last one.
Was it?
When they won the championship.
When they beat Michigan,
with,
ironically.
Brock Besser. Since then, nothing really. They had that team that was really good in the COVID year when they had all the Ottawa Senators draft picks.
Oh, yeah.
And then they got beat in 15 like overtimes by...
in a beer league game.
By Duluth in the
Wizard Sorcerers.
Round. Yes,
yeah.
So...
I don't hate this matchup for Michigan. It's not...
I hate it in the sense that North Dakota is a really good team. On
yes.
the other hand, you're a 3 seed, so too bad.
But you look at the style of play and you think Michigan skate with them. You don't look; they're not going to be overwhelmed by talent. They don't have a goalie who you're not going to be able to beat. They don't have an insane penalty killer, an insane power play. They're just a good team, and Michigan is a good team as well. This feels, in some ways, sort of like an overtime game. Or what will eventually be an overtime game.
Wouldn't be surprising.
Of like a one goal game coming down to the end.
There's some fun poetics in all of that. That North Dakota hasn't been to the Frozen Four since they beat Michigan, and Michigan hasn't lost in the regional setting since they lost to North Dakota.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow, it is.
Something's got to change
yeah.
in this matchup.
The interesting thing for me is that, you know, this has the makings to be maybe the best game of the opening round.
Probably.
And it will be in front of 2,500 people, and that's not because no one will be at the event. This game is actually sold out.
It better be. It's a 2,500-seat arena.
So maybe tickets prices will be through the roof, and they'll be going for... 3 and 4 times outside.
I saw some tickets on SeatGeek today. Someone shared a screenshot
for this?
Going like $900.
Not for this game?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
This is my addendum to last week. If you're giving up $900 to watch college hockey, you should still have that bag that you had from Munn last week on your head.
Or you just have too much money and don't know what to do with it. this feels like a very even game. You know, hopefully... Michigan rolls a 6 and not a 1 in it, and they get to play the next game, because if they do, they will play a team from their home state.
Yes, it will be either MSU, which not a lot of discussion is needed because we just talked about them, and we've talked about them ad nauseum this season.
We keep talking about them, it feels like.
Western Michigan's more interesting to discuss, I guess you could say. They squeaked into the tournament, shored up their position late in the year to jump in. And
well, they're a 4 seed that's not an automatic qualifier, which is kind of a big deal, right? Because you're not getting one of those throwaway teams that is way out of the tournament but gets in because they had to win a conference.
They finished 6th in their conference, and they're in the tournament as an at-large seed.
Which is...
goes to show you that the NCHC was really good this year.
Yeah.
Also goes to show you that they were really bad in overtime. They were 1-5 in overtime games in conference, 10-8 in regulation. That probably tipped the scales for them.
Okay.
And they have a +40 goal differential, so it's not like this team is a joke.
The thing is that, you know, do you trust Cameron Rowe?
They did play Lindenwood 4 times. They didn't beat him like by a ton, but that is something we should add. Yeah, Cameron Rowe, I look at these teams and I sort of say, this is interesting for MSU, right? It's not... They haven't been served a silver platter.
No.
The way Michigan did each of the last 2 years.
I mean, Michigan the last 2 years, one, they were the number one overall.
1 year, and then they were number three overall last year.
Something
I
with
believe.
Three.
And they got a massive break because Colgate jumped up to 14th.
Yeah, because there were three automatic qualifiers.
Yes, and they somehow were higher in pairwise than Merrimack. Merrimack wasn't any good either. But,
well, there you go. Okay.
So most years, you're not going to get a draw like that, and MSU's return to the tournament. It's been really nice to see the unity in college hockey. When I scroll through Twitter and I see the, whatever that account is called, the Let's Go DU, like Denver account.
Yeah.
And then I see Jerbear and I see all these people with pitchforks out screaming about the tournament. I'm like, yes.
Yes.
Let's go.
Join us.
Keep it going.
Join us in our revolution that we will eventually be put down because 11 people cannot overturn anything. But.
So, no, this is a really veteran Western team, and that's going to be interesting for MSU, which is a more on the younger side. Luke Granger, Sam Colangelo, Matteo Costantini, Ethan Phillips, Zach Galambos, Carter Berger, Joe Cassetti. Those are all either seniors or grad players.
Hmm.
And then Tim Washey and Hugh Larkin, Cedric Field. Man, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, maybe 12 out of 15 of their top players by points are either seniors or grad players. That's crazy.
Well, so 2 years ago, they kind of had one of those teams.
Yeah,
and then last year, they weren't as good.
Some of these guys, they fished out of the portal.
Sure, but I mean, like 2 years ago, they had one of their best teams they'd ever had.
Yeah.
And won a tournament game, I believe. And then this year, or then last year, they weren't quite as good. And this year, now they're a very old team again and have... You know, they have some goal scorers. They have you know, a couple guys that have 23 goals, Wendt and Colangelo.
They can score a lot. This is a high-scoring regional for really good offensive teams. And that's why I kind of lean towards MSU in this matchup, just because I feel like this is going to be a free-flowing game, a lot of shooting and that kind of stuff. And I expect in that context that it, you know, might just be if both goalies are getting peppered, do I trust Trey Augustine or do I trust...
Cameron Rowe. No, that's definitely not a bad take there. It should be an absolutely loaded regional. I mean, I asked you, you know, yesterday, what do you think the chances are for each team? And, you know, you basically said, yeah, somewhere around 30-30-30 and then maybe 10 for Western to come out of the regional.
Yeah, I think that's something like that. I'm not picking Michigan to come out of the regional. It just doesn't feel like the year. It hasn't really felt like that all season, but this is the stupidest tournament in sports. So,
well, in the last
two good games and
the last 2 years, we were both kind of like, hey, you know what? They got a shot to win a national title. And this year we're both kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's there, but you know, I don't know. There's always seems something to go wrong. So it probably would be very college hockey if the last 2 years they don't and this year they do. So, but yeah, it's a tough draw overall. I think that none of these teams scare me.
When you're a three seed, you're just happy to be there.
Yeah. None of these teams scare me as in, like, Michigan can't win the games, but, you know, they are going to have to beat two top 10 teams, and, you know, Michigan has struggled to put together back-to-back strong performances for most of the year. Do you want to go over the rest of... We can skim through the other regionals, and you can shout out something that you see, or...
One thing that dawned on me with regards to this tournament,
mm-hmm.
Man, they got all the big names in this tournament.
You mean from teams?
Yeah, they left out CC in a true tragedy, but otherwise, nine of the top 10 teams by Frozen Four appearances all time are in this tournament.
Hmm.
Only one that's left out is Harvard, then CC is 11th, and then Michigan Tech, and then go down a couple more, and there's Cornell. I mean, this is like, these are all the big names. Everybody's here. Even the ones that were asleep for more than a decade are back, like Maine and MSU and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So, from a brand value, this is the best NCAA tournament I've ever seen.
Okay.
There's no jokers here.
So, in Springfield, you have Denver the one, because that makes sense. Maine is the two. All right. Cornell, the three. Okay. That was fine. And then UMass, the four. So not only does DU go on the road across the country, but they play a host team in a true road game, being the number three overall.
Yeah, they got screwed here. No question about it. But
The thing is, though, is like I looked at this and I kind of wrote my part of the preview Sunday night and was just kind of looking at the other teams and the matchups, and I'm like, even though that I don't love like what happened to Denver, it's kind of hard for me to see them not coming out of this regional. I mean, anything can happen because that's what the tournament is, but like
that Denver team looks terrifying.
Yeah.
Because they have the great scoring they've had all year, and then the last 10 games, the goalie's like, well, what if instead of 880, I decide to be 925?
Well, then...
And the result is they win every game.
The result is they become BC.
Yeah, so they look real good. I do like UMass's goalie. I do like Cornell's goalie. So those are... That's a pathway for an upset to happen.
I just don't know that...
It just doesn't seem like
when
it's
the waves
happening.
Start crashing of Denver forwards after Denver forwards after Denver forwards, and then their defensemen, and like, can is anyone going to be able to stand up to it?
Yeah,
and it's hard to see that it could. I mean, you know, it's a nice story for Maine to come back and get in the tournament, but you know, you take away the two brothers that are headlining that team,
yeah,
and
there's no scoring depth.
There's
in that
not
team.
Really anything there. The goaltending is
not particularly
not
special.
Very good. So it does feel a little bit like Denver's regional. The other one in the other regional in the East is Providence. Providential regional, should we call it that? Boston College, Wisconsin, Quinnipiac, Michigan Tech. I don't think anyone's touching BC in this regional. In fact, I will even be surprised if any of the games are particular or if any of BC's games are particularly close.
So I was looking at the Cratch ratings for the tournament preview piece. They have Boston College as the best college hockey team in the last 20 years, and by a pretty substantial margin in their rating system, this BC team is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it will be a huge surprise if they don't win both these games, especially because I don't respect any of these teams.
Well, they didn't
really. I you know, Quinnipiac earned its stripes at long last, winning
sure.
the national championship, but they're a diminished version of that team.
Right.
I think they maybe have the best chance to make some noise here. Wisconsin, neither of us are high on.
I think they're a fraud, personally. But
they are 7-7-2, I think, in their past 16 games.
With like four losses to Ohio State.
Yeah. Just
who's better, don't get me wrong. But
and Tech in past years might have been doable. Blake Pietola is still really good, but the rest of the team is profoundly stinky.
Well, they just got crushed by Penn State last year. They hung around for a period or so, maybe into the second, and then it was over.
If there's one thing you got to give Tech credit for, is they turned their season around. They started the year 0-4-3, and then they got it back. They did not win a game in October, and then they got it back on track. So give them credit for that, but it doesn't really seem like this is the year that they're beating the great team. Because my thing with this is there were a few 1-16 upsets, but if you go back in the Cratch ratings, a lot of them were not particularly special number one overall seeds, playing frisky 16 seeds. And then we've seen these last few years, because the team that kept doing it, remember back in the day, was Bob Motzko's St. Cloud team. They did it twice. The Air Force 1 year, and I don't remember who it was the other year. But what's changed is now we've gone from that kind of number one overall seed to a number one overall seed the last 3 years with BC, Michigan, and Minnesota, where it's like our number one seed is we have five future all-stars in the NHL on our team. And between the Canisius game and Michigan against AIC, we've now seen some evidence of what that looks like.
And I'm kind of glad that's happening, because you don't want this awesome college hockey team to lose in the first round. Like, obviously, from a Michigan perspective, you want them to when it's not you, because that greatly increases your chances. But from a college hockey-wide perspective, you want to see this BC team. You want to see what happens when they play BU in the Frozen Four, when they play a Michigan State or a Michigan, when they play a Denver. You know, those are the matchups that you want. And so it would be nice to get to the point of where at least the one seeds are winning their first round game. Like, it's too goofy when that doesn't happen anymore. But
yeah, I mean, this BC team has lost five games all season.
Yeah.
And two of the five were by one goal and the other ones were by two goals. I mean,
so I do one of the things I add on in the preview is like for the last thing is what's your record in your last five? And, you know, Michigan Tech is 5-0 in their last five. That's pretty good. For the BC part of it, they're 19-2 in their last 21. Like, I couldn't even go back to five because I kept seeing win.
Yeah, they lost in the Bean Pot by one to BU.
To BU.
Who then they just pummeled over the weekend.
Yeah, and then they lost, I think, one other game.
They lost to Providence by one. They have no multi-goal losses in calendar 2024.
This team is, they're probably going to St. Paul. I would feel pretty confident of that. The last regional, Sioux Falls regional, where I wish Michigan was going, BU, Minnesota, UNO, Omaha, and RIT. And there is very little about this regional that makes any sort of sense, sans Minnesota being there, because they're at least remotely close by. BU is coming from out east as the number two overall. Hooray. And then Omaha is the host when they're two states away, but I guess their umbilical cord is I-29, and that's the only thing that connects them to Sioux Falls. And then the four even has to go forever and a day away is RIT. Like, this doesn't... None of this makes any sense.
Yeah, and this isn't the most exciting regional of all time.
The only redeeming quality of this is you could potentially have BU Minnesota facing off, and they have like tournament history going back years and years and years, and anytime you get these two programs facing each other, it's always kind of fun. But outside of that, like, you couldn't have picked like a more random spackled together regional.
Yeah, it's just these teams are, and nothing here has really got me fired up. Minnesota, Omaha,
yeah, I don't
know much about Omaha, honestly. Minnesota, we've seen a lot. They're not interesting at all.
Not really.
BU, RIT, again, we know what a NHL-laden number one seed against the Atlantic Hockey team looks like. Probably not going to be a competitive matchup.
It feels like the regional final should be an inverse of the Frozen Four game last year.
BU, Minnesota, that would be moderately interesting.
It could be moderately interesting. Last year, Minnesota kind of wiped the floor with them.
Yeah, it wasn't super close.
And this year it feels like BU...
I think Minnesota could put up a fight in that one.
Maybe. I think that BU's probably the better team.
They're definitely the better team, but...
So this does feel like a tournament where you have three of the 4-1 seeds are definitively the best team in their region.
Yeah, and it's just we're going to see if anyone can knock them off.
And all the other teams that look dangerous are in the other region where you have State, who's, you know, by default has become the 4th 1 seed. North Dakota probably could have, should have been a 1 seed had they not had a tournament falter. And then Michigan has been one of the hotter teams in the country in the last month or so and has sort of put it together. And if you put them in another region, you're kind of like, oh, they got a good shot to come out. Winning both of those games is tough because of the draw with North Dakota.
I think they needed to spread Nodak and Michigan out.
Yeah, because that's kind of the depth of the tournament, and they put it all in one regional.
Yeah, that's why they need someone to tell them who the serious teams are, and then they can make
Should you be the college hockey czar?
A good bracket. By the way, one thing that doesn't get brought up enough in the college hockey tournament sucks discussion is...
Because we don't have this enough.
No, it never gets talked about much.
Okay.
But why do they have two games overlapping at 5 o'clock as, like, part of this?
Yeah.
I mean, I know why they do, because apparently they can't, like, make people go to one game and then come back later for a different game. But you've only got so many of these games, and you're going to put them, you know, up against each other?
There's not much about this tournament, and it's getting to be sort of that...
And especially Thursday is opening day for the MLB season, which most of the teams are playing at 4 o'clock, so...
Having two college hockey games on the Thursday?
Thankfully, you should not be watching BURIT anyway.
Well, you won't be for long. it should be an interesting tournament. Don't love Michigan's chances the way I have the past couple of years. I don't think that it's impossible for them to get out of this bracket. It would not be shocking if they came out of this regional, but I also would put their chances as, you know, less than 1 out of 2. I would say that there's a greater chance that we're doing sort of the wrap-up show next week than the looking forward to St. Paul show.
It's hard to go to the Frozen Four that many times in a row.
So. Well, and that's the other thing. And, you know, that's the bummer of, you know, not striking it the last couple of years is, you know, when you get your chances, you kind of have to take them. And, you know, they haven't done that. You know, but there's nothing saying that they can't do it this year. You know, they have a blueprint to beat State. I think that North Dakota isn't an immovable wall. And then, you know, Western is a tough team, but I wouldn't hate Michigan's chances in that game either.
I feel comfortable playing Western.
Well, that is that what you'll be rooting for?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
Thank you for listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 6.21 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Next week, we will be breaking down the NCAA tournament in some amount of detail, but find out how much.